Welcome back to Saturday Splash with Lynn
and Maddie.
And a special guest today. Today we have Andrew Padula from Padula's Plants in Greer. Welcome.
Thanks for having me here today.
So this is our yard waste episode, our fall episode. We're getting ready for the fall. The leaves are about to start turning. We can start planting our fall gardens. We can start doing lots of yard work. So we're learning all about that today. So Andrew is here to talk with us about invasive plants, native plants, pros, cons, all you need to know. So Andrew, what do we need to know?
Well, there's difference opinions about native plants and invasives. Native plants usually tend to come about over time. In order for a plant to become a native, time has to be involved. At one point in time, all plants came from somewhere else.
Sure, that makes sense.
So in order, you know, part of what makes a plant native is how well it adjusts to the ecosystem it's in, how well the animals around it have come to depend on it. Also, what benefits it offers the ecosystem it's in.
Great. So what are some of the... Let's talk about invasives, because we have a lot of those here in Greenville County, and some people might think that they are native.
Yes, there's quite a bit of invasives, and there's different levels of invasiveness depending how aggressive the plant is. Kudzu is a prime example.
I think everybody...
The vine that ate the South.
I think everybody knows about kudzu.
Yep, kudzu is a good example.
You've seen it because it's growing over everything.
That's right. It's very aggressive.
Yeah, and somebody brought that here eventually. That came here from overseas in Asia, perhaps?
Yeah, it was originally brought over for erosion control.
And you'll notice a lot of the native plants here have Asian origin, because their climate over in China is very similar to that of South Carolina. So the climate's similar, so the plants do well. However, their native predators are fewer and far between since these plants were introduced here, so there's not as much that eats them.
So
but that's right.
Goats love kudzu,
which is awesome.
Clemson University just did a study recently where they had goats on campus eating all of the kudzu. So nice. If you have goats, it's good goat fodder.
It is. It's a very useful herb. It's an important medicinal herb. It has a wide range of uses. It can help people stop drinking. It's also a nitrogen fixer. So if you had, hypothetically, if it wasn't so aggressive, it would be excellent for the garden.
Oh, good. So tell us a little bit more about nitrogen fixing. What does that mean?
Well, basically, that's when a plant, a chosen plant is put into the garden because it adds nitrogen to the soil. And what that's going to do basically is encourage all the other plants that's growing around the nitrogen fixer to have lush green growth.
So nitrogen in soil, good.
Yes, too much is bad.
True. And we just talked about yard waste and yard waste pollution on our last segment. So yes, too many nutrients, bad. But just the right enough amount of nutrients. Good.
Yep,
this is why you use fertilizer in appropriate amounts.
Right. And a nitrogen fixer helps eliminate the use for fertilizer.
Yeah.
And that's one thing to keep in mind is that, when you're growing vegetable crops or fruit crops, the amount of nitrogen in the soil is very important, because if you have too much nitrogen, you're going to have a lot of leaf growth, but very few flowers. If you have too few nitrogen, you're going to be depleting the plant of essential nutrients that it needs.
So what are some good nitrogen fixers that we can plant?
Around here, I have one that I really like. It may be considered non-native. I don't consider it very aggressive as far as invasiveness goes, because it is an evergreen, and most evergreens are slow growing, and this one's in that category. It's a thorny silverberry. The Latin name for it is Eleagnus. And what that does, basically, it's a nitrogen fixer, but it's also a fruit. The fruits that it produces are edible. The seeds also contain omega-3 fatty acids, which is an added bonus to it.
Oh, that's cool. So fruit, is it fruit like you would generally see, like berries?
Or? Yes, it has a unique fruiting schedule because it is evergreen. So in this case, it produces fall flowers, which are carnation-scented, almost like nyanthus, very spicy clove-smelling.
Mm.
It will create its fruit or make its fruit over the wintertime, which is unusual for fruit plants in the area, but because it's evergreen, it can do that. And the berries are ripe in early to mid-spring, which is a good fruit plant because a lot of other fruit plants aren't ready at that time.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a way to get your fruit early in the
season.
All
year long.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And the berries contain about 10 to 17 times more lycopene than tomatoes.
Wow. And what do they taste like? What's the comparison?
I have some at the nursery, and like everything, it's all about when you pick them. Mm-hmm. You know, like you pick a berry a day or two early, it tastes dramatically different than when you pick it when it's ripe.
That's true. So
that's just something. But, you know, they have their own unique tastes, a lot like goji berries do. It's kind of in a taste of its own.
Sure. So tell us a little bit more about your nursery.
Well, it's an organic-based nursery. I do year-round outdoor gardening there. We have about, on average, around 100 species of plants there year-round, and it bumps up to about 130 to 180 during the summer, during the warmer season.
Wow.
But it is all chemical-free growing. We do make our own soil mix there. It's much more of a ground-level nursery, and what I mean by that is we don't order our plants and resell them. All the growing and the propagating takes place at the nursery.
So you must have a huge staff for that.
We got myself, we got two project managers. We also do garden design out of the nursery. So that's project managers and also my friends, Peter and Amir. They help out greatly. And they've been working at the nursery for about 3.5 years now.
That's great.
Wow.
So back to native plants. Why do we want native plants?
Natives are awesome. So native plants... Essentially, native plants have evolved with the landscape, so they've evolved to the conditions of the area. So the amount of water that they need is the amount of water the area gets. Their roots tend to grow deeper. They tend to, grow very well. This is the area, or these are the areas that they have evolved in. So native plants, good. They require less work, really.
They you're right. They do require less work. Oftentimes, they have multi-uses to them as well. Like there's quite a bit of native plants that are also herbs here in the area. Some of them are not really recognized as herbs because they're not in the mainstream. They're not like the herbs you would cook with, like rosemary, basil. They're more on the medicinal side. A Salvia lorata, a common name for that is cancer root, is a good native. That one is pretty common in the area. It usually flowers during summertime. And, you know, being a salvia, it is in the mint family. So that's something that is very well, and as we all know, mint is pretty hard to kill. So, and that's you gotta light it on fire, you know. Oh, yeah. But that's something that is a good example of a native that's also an herb. There's some other ones, native flowers like Carolina elephant's foot. That's a more uncommon one. Orange butterfly weed is an important native because it's also a host plant for monarchs.
That's awesome. So natives are good. Invasives, not so good. They can be okay. It depends. Andrew was mentioning aggressive species versus non-aggressive species. So, invasives aren't always bad, but when they completely take over the ecosystem, causing ecological damage, that is what's bad. So what are some common invasives that we see? And is there anything that we can do to help prevent them or get rid of them? Or is it a losing battle, or are we on top of it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm currently working with the Greenville Zoo to go and help them with their invasive plant problem. And one of the things that we're doing at the zoo is we're going to do a walkthrough with the staff and point out the invasive species and how they can help curb them and control them to get the zoo more to a ecosystem type style design instead of an invasive species. Right now they have English ivy, and that's not just at the zoo. This is all around. English ivy, Virginia creeper, porcelain berry vine, kudzu. They're all aggressive, which makes them higher on the invasive list.
And you know what else I see all around here, which is surprising to me, is bamboo.
That's another
big invasive, isn't it?
It is. It's invasive. Being in the grass family, you know, it grows like grass, so it can take off pretty easily.
And somebody might think, you know, we had neighbors that thought, oh, this is a great idea. This is going to be a good screening plant. I will plant some bamboo here, and then I won't have to see my neighbors. Not the neighbors on my side, I would like to say. They like to see us. It's the neighbors on the other side that they don't like to see. But now they can't get rid of the bamboo.
Well, yeah, and that can be deceiving. When bamboo is being sold as clump-forming bamboo, that's not to say it won't spread. That's just saying that it won't spread as quickly as other varieties.
Mm-hmm. So non-native plants may be okay for house plants, but when you're done with them, please don't dump them outside. This is how we introduce invasives into our ecosystem. Whether that's plants or animals, it's usually because somebody introduced them intentionally or not intentionally. A lot of invasives come over, especially back when we didn't know that invasives were bad. Back in the days, you know, you'd fill up your cargo ship and send it across the ocean, and you're bringing all sorts of stuff that you didn't know was bad or you didn't even know you had on your ship.
And sometimes they can be pretty. Bradford pears are beautiful when they're blooming.
Yeah. They are beautiful. One problem with the Bradford pears is that since they are hybrids, you know, when they, let's say, for example, a bird eats the berry and the bird goes somewhere else. And when the bird goes to the bathroom, that berry grows into a Bradford pear like tree. But it's not going to be the exact tree because it's going to revert back to one of the parent plants.
Oh,
so that's why you may see some old Bradford pears. Some newer ones have thorns because, you know, apples, roses, they all have thorns to them. They're all in the family.
That's super interesting. The Bradford pears too. They split really easily, don't they?
They do. They have a structural flaw which causes them to branch out unevenly and at bad angles.
Oh, so you're not really supposed to eat the pear?
No, it's not an edible. It's more ornamental. It's more for the flowers.
Those pretty white flowers that kind of smell just a little bit.
Oh yeah.
That doesn't smell really pretty. And the other thing that you see taking over almost as bad as kudzu here, wisteria.
Oh, yeah.
And wisteria is a very tough one. Peter and I finished a project recently in Traveler's Rest where wisteria was a pretty big issue. And that's one thing where a little bit goes a long way. You can remove it, but 1 inch of root and you've got your problem all over again in 2 years.
We've been driving down the road and we've seen tall, tall 50-foot trees covered in vines and covered with purple flowers, which, again, they're pretty for about 3 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what can you do, listener? First of all, it's just to educate yourself and learn about what these exotic plants look like. A good resource is the newly revised book, Exotic Invasive Plant Species of South Carolina, which you can acquire for free if you call your local Clemson Extension office, or you can email the South Carolina Exotic Pest Plant Council, and we'll put a link to that on our website. But just learning about the plants and what you can do. The Swamp Rabbit Trail recently came out with a brochure that has one side is covered in native plants and one side is covered in invasives. So you can actually walk down the trail and check that out and see what you're looking at. That was done by the Native Plant Society. So real quick, Andrew, tell us where we can find your shop if we want to come by.
Well, there's a couple places. We're located at 1027 Plantation Road in Greer. And we have a nice mix of herbs, some tropicals, wildflowers, a lot of natives, also some ornamentals. But we also have a nice selection of natives at the Greer Farmers Market. And that's every Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. downtown Greer.
Perfect. And we're going to keep Andrew over, I think, for the next segment. And we'll talk about the Farmers Market because it has just recently won an award.
Stay tuned. You're listening to the Saturday Splash here on 94.5 WGTK The Answer.